This is the Rock and Roll Autopsy Podcast.
All right, I'm going to zap her again. Charge up the paddles. Come on, let's go.
Sorry, doctor.
Hold the compressions.
Clear.
Straight line.
Good evening and welcome to Rock and Roll Autopsy. We are the Forensic Files on your radio dial. My name is Scott, and if we got a great show for you tonight, no, we don't. The request line is ringing again. All right, let's pick it up. WRNRA, east of the Rockies. Hey, breather, good to hear from you, man. What's going on? You want to borrow a cup of sugar? Weird, but okay, sure. Yeah, I've got peaches. You want to borrow those too? But you don't need cream. Okay. Yeah, you can borrow it, but you gotta pour it yourself. Listen, you called the request line. Is there a song you'd like us to perform an autopsy on?
I said...
Pour some sugar on me? Def Leppard? You got it. All right, buckle up, gang. The subject of our rock and roll autopsy tonight will be Pour Some Sugar on Me by pop rockers Def Leppard. We'll get the show started after these very important messages from our sponsors.
4 long years of planning and rehearsal.
Oh, man, I've been waiting for this one.
The hottest rock and roll phenomena of the 80s. Welcome back.
Welcome to my show.
Def Leppard. C92 celebrates the most unique rock and roll event of the year.
You want it?
Awesome, man.
You got it.
Part of the Homer's Concert Series. December 8th in the Civic Auditorium. Def Leppard. A giant 300-ton stage set up right in the middle of the floor. Suspended high overhead, the massive array of speakers.
That's the coolest stage I've ever seen.
The lights were just incredible, man. We were sitting on the top row, and you could just almost reach out and touch Joe Elliott.
Def Leppard and special guest, Tesla. Tickets now at Pacific Auditorium. All Homer's Records, Yonkers Ticket Centers, Pickles Records. Tickets or phone 402-342-7107. December 8th in the Civic Auditorium. Produced by Contemporary. Def Leppard. Hysteria. Homer's, a worldwide chain of four.
Breaking news!
What is this garbage you're watching? I want to watch the news.
This is the news.
All right, gang, we have our intrepid rock and roll beat reporter, Rico Gnu, with the good news. Rico, how are you, sir?
I'm gnasty today. No, I'm good, man. It's good to have you back. I know you were on a double secret assignment last week, and you were out doing God knows what, and I'm glad you made it back. So welcome back.
Thank you very much, sir. It's good to be back. What's going on out there in the rock and roll universe?
Well, this was a good week in rock and roll history. So let's get started. December 11th, 1957, a 22-year-old Jerry Lee Lewis secretly wed his third wife, 13-year-old third cousin Myra Brown in Tennessee. The marriage lasted 14 years and seriously damaged his career. So what is it with rock stars and barely old enough teenagers? I'm just trying to understand that. This isn't the first instance of this, right?
No, it's certainly not. It's what strikes me beside the obvious here is, I mean, this isn't even barely old enough. This is 13. This one's not even kissing 18 yet. But what's really striking is that Jerry Lee is 22 and it's his third wife already. It's like,
I know, right?
Mixing those aren't wives. Those
those are girlfriends that you're just breaking up with, you know? Maybe yeah. Don't tie the knot.
He's like, fuck it. I can't stay married to somebody that, I mean, my relative has to love me, right? Let's just go for a cousin. Fuck it, right? 14 years though, right? So I don't know exactly what that means, but
yeah, I'm not smart enough to figure that out.
You know the old saying, if you can't keep it in the pants, .. Anyway, December 11th, 1973, Kiss guitar, that's keep it in the family, by the way. December 11th, 1973, Kiss guitarist Ace Frehley was nearly electrocuted during a concert in Florida when he touched a short-circuited light. The guitarist was carried from the stage but returned 10 minutes later to finish the show. What a trooper.
What a trooper. Way to go, Ace.
Good job, buddy. And you know the best thing to come out of this?
Stopped his guitar solo?
Shock me. Makes the feel better. Yeah.
Yeah.
That song came from this, right?
Oh, wow. I didn't put two and two together. That's cool. Yeah. All right.
So the song Shock Me was inspired by his near-death experience.
Near-death.
Being the selfless entertainer that he is.
Have you ever been electrocuted?
Yeah, dude, I've been zapped by an outlet a couple times.
Yeah, me too, man.
It's no bueno at all.
I never took it as any creative inspiration, though. So good on Ace.
Yeah, man. I didn't feel like writing a song afterwards, but hey, you know, that's why I'm not a rock star, I suppose, right?
Yeah, I guess so.
Whatever. December 16th, 1983, The Who issued a statement making their breakup official, a formality considering they called their last show in 1982 their farewell tour.
Wow.
Though it was far from the end, as they reunited for a seemingly unending series of quote-unquote reunions, starting with Live Aid in 1985. Help me understand these bands that have 87 farewell tours. Just forget the farewell tour. It's just become a sad, stale marketing ploy now, right?
It's so cliche, isn't it? The Who is funny, too, because it seemed like the only thing that was going to end them was the members just started dying off. And now, though, I mean, they still continue as Daltrey and Townsend, right? I mean,
they're on their 9800th farewell tour. They're still going strong.
Unbelievable.
How would you rather go? Would you rather go Keith Moon style by drinking yourself to death, right? Isn't that how he died? Like Bonham, I think, right? Or
yeah, I think so.
Would you rather go John Entwistle style?
Which was?
In a hotel room, in bed with a hooker, OD'd on coke.
Oh, that's the way Alleged. To go right there. With your finger on a shorted out light socket. That's
right.
That's the way to go, man.
Running Absolutely. Away from your 13-year-old wife.
Yeah, I mean, yeah.
I agree.
Anytime you can go out with hookers and cocaine, that's the way to go. I mean, drinking yourself to death is kind of sad, right?
Sure it is. I mean, look at the movie Leaving Las Vegas. I mean, what's more fun, watching Nick Cage drink himself to death or watching the Motley Crue movie where they all like do mountains of blow and have a really great time? Cocaine wins every time.
It does, indeed.
Let's all aspire to die from coke in bed with a hooker. Can we all do that?
We can do that.
Sounds like a good idea. Last but not least, December 16th, 1993, MTV aired Nirvana's Unplugged session for the first time. The album featured an acoustic performance taped at Sony Music Studios in New York City on November 18th of that year. Unlike many artists who appeared on the show, Nirvana filmed its entire performance in a single take, with the band's 14-song set list, including 6 cover versions. Let me ask you a question.
Yeah.
So everybody talks about how magical this performance was, and we might do another little side up someday about MTV, but I don't want to get I don't want to get into that, but everybody thinks this is a magical session. So here's my question. Was this so magical because it was magical, or was it magical after the fact because he died shortly after and it was his last performance? You see what I mean? Did it only become magical because he died shortly afterwards? Because we all know that people's work becomes more desired after they die. So you see what I'm getting at? Was this performance really that great, or was it only great because he died afterwards?
He died in what, April of 94? So he's about 4 or 5 months away, right?
Mm-hmm.
I think that's it. Yeah, I don't know. I'm not really the guy to judge this. I mean, do I go back and listen to it? No. Do I like individual tracks from it? Yeah, the Bowie cover is good. The Lead Belly cover is good. You know, Lake of Fire is good. There's good performances on it. But did I find the whole thing captivating? No, I didn't watch it live on MTV when it aired. I didn't watch it in repeats. I saw it when they cut it up and made individual, you know, video segments out of it. So to me, it fell right into the soup of everybody was doing unplugged sessions back then. They were just another band doing it, and there was nothing special or unique about it to me at the time. And I suppose today, I still view it the same way.
Interesting. Good job. Do you have a favorite unplugged at all, or do you just not care enough? No?
I mean, I watched them when they were on. I mean, when they were on MTV, they were neat. They were a curiosity. It was cool to see bands doing it. But I mean, I can't think of one that I was like, "Oh wow, that's I'm going back." I can't think of a single that was during the CD age, and I bought a few of them on CD. I can't think of one that I like thought was, you know, I don't know. I mean, that even rivaled like a live record. They were just curiosities to me.
Not even Grunge Kiss?
No. I mean, it was neat because you saw Ace come out and Peter, and it was neat for that kind. And the performance was good, not taken away from the performance. There were unplugged performances. It's just, do I have to give a shit about it? I mean, it was just, I think to your point, I guess it's these things have gained stature over time, you know, and especially this one because Kurt Cobain committed suicide. But I mean, at the end of the day, I mean, let's put it this way. If I buy a ticket to go see a band and midway through their set, they're pulling out chairs and acoustic guitars, it's time to go buy a beer. I mean, that's, am I wrong?
No, that's true.
I mean, I even remember the Rolling Stones at this time did an album called Stripped, and it's like, you don't want to see that, you know? And like, I remember we saw Metallica Blossom. I think it was like the Reload tour, and halfway through the set, they like pull out the chairs and they get the stools out and the acoustic guitars. And it's like, it's Oof. Time to go use the restroom. I mean, it's,
I'm sorry. Potty you, time. Did you pay for that show?
Oh yeah.
Oh wow. I'm sorry.
Yeah. I was there with a few people you might know, but it's, that's a bathroom break. If the band, if you go see a rock band and, you know, after midway through the show, they're breaking out the bar stools and the acoustic guitars. They're telling you, you can go use the restroom now.
Go use the bathroom. Go get a pretzel. You know, maybe some nachos with some of that awesome cheese sauce.
Yep.
That's the time to get a little snack and a pee break.
Yeah, it's time to go to the restroom.
Speaking
man.
Of breaks. Yes. Speaking of pee breaks, we're going to take a little break and we'll be right back.
We are gathered here to remember rock and roll. Rock was born the rambunctious son of country, western, and blues. In the year of our Lord, 1955, on this day, the birth of rock and roll gifted under the world a gyrating pelvis, a throbbing beat, and a pulsating rhythm, a sound so infectious and rollicking
that it would endow previously scrupulous young minds with identity, individualism, and purpose, thus setting forth a multi-generational pursuit of all that is loud, debaucherous, and unholy. But, sadly, like all earthly endeavors, rock too must perish. Oh, we mourn the loss of rock and roll, with its ridiculously old standard bearers still on tour and charging ungodly amounts of Mad Jack to witness their long past the sell-by date asses on stage, and with its chauvinism, misogyny, and whiteness no longer aligning with modern sensibilities, and with its aging, fist-shaking fan base kicking every would-be rocker off their proverbial lawn, rock has indeed passed into the celestial void. May rock rest in peace, in eternal cacophonous slumber. Amen.
Thank you for that, Scott.
You are listening to the Rock and Roll Autopsy Podcast.
The Autopsy Report.
All right, welcome back. We've got Pour Some Sugar on Me by Def Leppard off the album Hysteria, released September 8th, 1987. Recorded just a little bit before that, December 1986. It's about 4 minutes and 27 seconds long. A little on the long side for a radio hit, but that's okay. It did pretty well, I think. Label is Mercury, songwriter Joe Elliott, Mutt Lang, the famous Mutt Lang, Phil Collins, Steve Clark, Rick Savage, producers Mutt Lang.
All right, gang, it's Rock and Roll Autopsy, and the song is Pour Some Sugar on Me by reluctant new wave of British heavy metal superstars Def Leppard. We've got to do an autopsy on this mug, and to do so, we've got five categories. They are gratuitous boomerism, excessive misogyny, wanton whiteness, malignant machismo, and culture vulturism. Rico, category one, Pour Some Sugar on Me. Gratuitous boomerism. Sir, how do you score it?
Yeah, I'm interestingly enough, I'm not going to give this any points. I'm going to give this a zero. I'm not feeling it. They're not really, in my opinion, and we'll get it more into this, but I'm not really feeling that type of get off my lawn type of I have this mindset that you guys really can't relate to anymore. I'm not feeling that at all in this song. The song is about sex. It's about sex appeal. That's universal. Every generation from way back into the pharaohs until way after we're long gone is all going to have the same mindset. We're all going to like sex. We're all going to want to talk about it. So I'm going to give this one a zero.
I see what you're saying, but I'm going to come at it from a different angle, sir. I'm going to give it a 0.5, and I'll tell you why.
All right.
Is it a boomer track? I don't think so. Are the guys in the band boomers? Young boomers or old Xers? Probably young boomers. I'm not really certain. So I can't really go there either. But what I can take a good look at is Generation Z. I don't know that they give a crap about Def Leppard. This song, this album, probably to them, just looks like boomer trash. I'm guessing, I mean, I see some Def Leppard t-shirts on the young kids, but I think they sell them in Walmart. So maybe they buy them from like an ironic hipster kind of perspective. But I don't know that Def Leppard and Pour Some Sugar on Me has any appeal to young kids who were listening to, like, you know, Billie Eilish and Juice WRLD. So I'm just going to give it a 0.5. All right. Category two, excessive misogyny. And Rico, if you need lyrics for reference, I'm happy to read them to you. I've got them pulled up.
Please help me out with some lyrics, if you would.
Step inside, walk this way. You and me, babe. Hey, hey. Love is like a bomb, baby. Come on, get it on. living like a lover with a radar phone, looking like a tramp, like a video vamp. Demolition woman, can I be your man, your man? Razzlin' a dazzlin', a flash a little light. Television lover, baby, go all night. Sometime, anytime, sugar me sweet. Little Miss Innocent, sugar me, yeah, yeah. I think I'll stop there, sir.
So again, I'm not going to give this one any points. I'm going to give it a zero. If you may or may not be aware, you probably are, but one of the inspirations for this song, was Walk This Way by Aerosmith. And Joe Elliott said he kind of wanted to incorporate a rap rock sort of a thing. And when him and Mutt Lange were developing the lyrics to this song, they kind of, the way they described it is they went on opposite sides of the studios and talked into a dictaphone, and then they swapped dictaphones to try and figure out what each person was saying. And it just kind of blossomed from there. The first thing that Joe Elliott interpreted was "Love is like a bomb," which is not really what Mutt Lange said, but it sounded really freaking cool. And so it just kind of went off from there. I'm not seeing misogyny here. What I'm seeing, again, this is just a dude that says, hey, you're hot. I think you might think I'm hot too. I wouldn't mind getting with you. He asks, can I be your man? He even asks her. He's not telling her. He's not saying, bitch, I'm going to bend you over. He's saying, hey, can I be your man? I think I'm not so bad myself. I think you might want to get with me, right? So can we do this? Can we hook up, perhaps? So I'm not seeing some misogyny. Listen, man, here's the thing. Sex and music is like pizza, right? Everybody loves pizza. People like pizza joints, right? But everybody loves pizza. Everybody wants pizza. Everybody will always want pizza. But it's just how it gets delivered, you know? A few decades ago, it was delivered by a conversion van. In the 80s, it was delivered by a DeLorean. You know, now sex and songs is delivered by the hip-hop and rap culture. Like, we've got songs like WAP by Cardi B. We've got people like Missy Elliott, for example. Missy Elliott has made a career, and a great one, mind you. I'm a giant Missy Misdemeanor fan. She's made a career out of objectifying men. Kind of like reverse misogyny. She made a career off of that. So what we know is people still want the pizza, Scott. They still want it. It's just how it gets delivered. And in this particular case, the pizza's getting delivered by a DeLorean, but the pizza is still there and it's still delicious. So I'm not seeing any misogyny once again, because he's not telling her that he's going to get with her. He's asking her, hey man, I think I'm all right. Can we do this or what?
Yeah. I mean, I think that's very well put. Yeah, sex in and of itself is not inherently misogynistic. This is just one or two people who are looking to get funky. I don't have any issues here. I don't see any misogyny. So I'm going to score that a zero. Let's move on to category three, wanton whiteness. Rico, how do you score?
Once again, I'm going to give this a zero. Sex in songs goes all the way. We've talked about this a million times. It started with the blues in the South. Every single culture on this planet, more or less, has their version of sex in songs and getting with people and relationships. This is not a whiteness thing. It just isn't. It's just not even close, in my opinion. This is a big fat zero.
Is this song danceable?
It sure the hell is, if you're wearing a thong.
Yeah.
It's got a pretty cool funk beat to it. I like it.
Yeah, it's a bit of
my opinion on this song has changed a lot over the years, I have to say.
Yeah, it's a stripper anthem, isn't it?
Well, sure it is.
This is a stripper anthem. This is I can remember I've heard of these places, stories about these places where women would be scantily clad and dancing to this. They'd have like the guy in the back who would introduce them, and then they'd come out and dance to Pour Some Sugar on.
Yeah, there's been a legend of those that have been right. There's been legend of those things passed down from generation to generation that I've heard the same stories you have.
Yeah, you know the dude in the back who's got the microphone and he's like the hype man and he's gonna set up the dancer and he's like, all right, guys, welcome to the back bar. Why don't you give a warm welcome to Candy Kane? Step inside. Walk this way. You and me, babe.
Hey, hey.
How many times have you heard that?
Hey, hey. The back bar.
Yeah, or the guys Christ. Like...
If somebody...
or the guys dreamers, like...
Thousand Dreamers. Remember that place?
The dude's like, all right, gentlemen, let's give a warm Dreamers welcome to Cinnamon Twist. Step inside. Walk this way. You and me. I mean, it just works,
hey,
right?
Hey, hey.
Hey, hey. It does. You can't have those joints without the hype man in the back.
That's the hype sure. man. You know, he's the guy, he's behind the glass, and he's got...
back bar. Well, he has to be.
Yeah.
All the God.
He later goes on to really host.
Go down this road, do we?
He later goes on to host SNL. You know, live from yeah. New York. It's Saturday night.
That guy used to be a hype man. Yeah. Yes. So how did you start your career? Well, I was a hype man at Dreamer Strip Club in Northeast Ohio.
Musical guest.
Oh my God.
Leopard. And your host, Midnight Thighs. Anyway.
Midnight Thighs. Yeah. Anybody knows the back bar or Dreamers, you get extra bonus points for that. So what category? Whiteness. Yeah. I'm a zero on whiteness. What's your score?
I mean, I'm gonna say that it's danceable and funky. It is a little stiff, I think, but you know, it's not quite as loose as one might, you know, imagine one of these danceable songs, if you know what I mean. It's got a little bit of stiff whiteness to its funk, if that makes sense. Clearly played by five British guys, you know, but I'm gonna give it a 0.5.
Yep. All right. I mean, it's too slow to, it seems like a song that you should be able to like, should swing, like, but it's too slow to swing.
Right.
And it's about as funky as four white British guys can get. So, all right. 0.5. Fair enough.
All right. Let's move on. Category 4, Malignant Machismo. Rico, how do you score?
Yeah, man. Once again, I'm going to give this a 0 because like he's not being macho. He's just like, babe, I think you're smoking. I think you're a smoke show, and I think I'm not so bad. And why don't we try this out? You know, shake the bottle, break the bubbles, bitch. Let's do this. I'm not seeing enough machismo to get a score out of that. I think he's just appreciating the fine beauty.
Here's the little breakdown. You got the peaches, I got the cream, sweet to taste, saccharin, because I'm hot, hot, say what? Sticky sweet from my head to my feet. Do you take sugar, one lump or two? Oh, shit. Yeah, a Malignant Machismo. I would score this a 0 as well. This is just a sex track, man. I don't see any... You know,
sure it is, and it's a. In my opinion, it's a harmless sex track. There's nothing malignant about this song at all. It's harmless.
Maybe it's not. Let's think about this. Maybe this song has some kind of wicked spell that it can cast on women, because when Def Leppard play it, women of all stripes and walks of life remove their tops. They can't help it. Right?
It's true.
I mean, bras come off when this song comes on.
When this song comes on, every female within earshot turns into an aspiring stripper.
And they lift their shirts up at the while sitting on their man's shoulders at the show every time. So maybe there is something nefarious at work here. Maybe they've written some, maybe there's some backward masking and all those layers upon layers upon layers of Joe Elliott and Mutt Lange vocals. How many tracks do you think they used on this thing? You know, this is like the Sergeant Peppers of hair metal here. I mean, this is the Pet Sounds of hair metal.
I would say probably at least 38 dozen tracks. 38 times 12 is about 450 tracks, I imagine.
All right, moving on. Category 5, Culture Vulturism. Rico, how do you score?
Once again, I give my final 0 to this. It's a totally unique song. The inspiration was Walk This Way, but only in the structure of the lyrics. It's the sound is Mutt Lange and Joe Elliott and the boys created a totally unique sound with this album and everything on it. I think it's definitely nothing remotely resembling Culture Vulturism. How do you feel?
I agree. I mean, I hear a lot of, like, when I hear this song, it reminds me of, this record reminds me of the Purple Rain record. I hear, like, When the Doves Cry. This is like 80s pop to me. And so, you know,
pop
is
rock,
it,
man, for sure.
Yeah, is there vulturism at work? No, sign of the times. I mean, it's a song that stood the test of time. It's still a, you know, it's a recognizable now classic rock song. So I would score this one a 0 as well. Rico, I think it's time to tally this up and find out if Pour Some Sugar on Me killed rock and roll. Sir, what score do you have?
I've got, if I were French, I would say I have l'œuf, which is egg, goose egg, 0.
I've got 1.
Well, what 0 + 1 means... they certainly did not kill rock and roll. They absolutely contributed to it with this song. How about that? Science works once again. They had, what, 7 hits off of this album? This album was a gigantic home run for them.
Sold 20 million copies. Now, when we talk about rock and roll and the death of rock and roll, I think in a lot of ways Def Leppard in the 80s represented, and I'm not arguing musically, but I'm arguing in terms of popularity. The height of rock's popularity was probably 1987 with the Hysteria album. The difference being, when you have women who love the music as much as men, you're going to sell a ton of records. And Def Leppard had women buying their records in droves, buying their concert tickets, made them the biggest band in the world, man. So, I mean, when you 20 million copies, 7 hit singles off this record, man, it's a juggernaut. So when I think, will rock ever hit that apex of popularity again? The answer to me is I can't see it happening. And well, so
unless they make it popular to females again. Right.
Yeah. And like women love, you know, Taylor Swift just has this massive new record out and this massive tour coming up. But, you know, but her, even her fan base is kind of limited. Right. It's a specific thing. Right. I don't think it'll ever be this broad again, where you kind of get that consensus broad appeal of one artist. You know, I don't know if it's possible.
Oh, yeah. Because you had the carryover fans from their first album. When they were still a little more metally, right?
Yeah.
And then they went out of their way to make this album poppier. So you had the carryover fans, and then you brought in a bunch of new fans. So it was like this perfect mishmash of old and new, and it just was the perfect storm of everything, and it just worked out perfectly for them.
Yeah, and they've been able to live off this record for like the rest of their career, you know.
Forever.
So I mean,
oh, I know.
Good for Def Leppard, man. They decided they want to punch that ticket to superstardom, and were certainly able to do so.
Absolutely, and a big props to them for not letting that bad car accident stop them, because this all went down after the car accident. So big ups to them for figuring a way around that.
Do you want to head over to the back bar and see if Cinnamon Twist is doing a second showing, an encore presentation?
Does a bear shit in the woods?
All right, guys, give a warm back bar welcome to... Come on, give me a stripper name real quick.
Wait, the name of your dog and the street that you were born on, right? The name of your dog and the street that you were born on.
I think that's your porn name. Isn't there a difference?
Oh, that's your porn name.
Isn't there a difference between your porn name and your stripper name?
I don't know. Is there, Scott?
I don't know. All right, guys, give a warm back bar welcome to Lollipop. Step inside. Walk this way. What's
you have me, babe? Hey, hey!
What's the other stripper anthem? It's girls, 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 right? So,
girls, girls, girls. The AC/DC shook me all night long.
Yeah, yeah,
right?
yeah. Isn't that one of them? That's true, but none bigger than
yeah. Those are like the big three, right?
Something about the shouted intro to Pour Some Sugar on Me just lends itself to introducing the latest dancer to the stage. Do you remember the shitty feeling when you'd meet some girl in a bar and you're in your 20s? And she'd be like, you know, what do you do? And you'd be like, oh, you know, I'm in importing, exporting. And you'd be like, what do you do? And she'd be like, I'm a dancer. And you'd be like, oh, cool. You know, like you're... You know, you do stage shows and stuff, and like, no. No, that's...
No, it's... And she's different, like, different kind of... Do you know where you are right now?
Different vocation.
you know you're in a dance bar, right, sweetie?
All right, guys, give a warm back bar welcome to... Come on, Rico. Give you a stripper name.
Bloody Suckles.
Step inside.
Walk the best I could come up with.
Any of them.
Joe Elliott, inspired by the 1970s cartoon Fat Albert in the beginning of his song.
Hey, hey.
Hey, hey. Oh, that shit. That's funny.
Hey, hey, hey.
All right, gang. This has been Rock and Roll Autopsy. Good night now.
Let me have that special rock and roll music. Yeah.
Let me tell you, so the lyrics to real rock music is nothing more than satanic cyanide. Get it out of your house, throw it out, and burn it. It has no place in the house of the righteous.
You guys, it was like a mystique. There's no mystique anymore.
To the dawn, love it, hey, to the morning, I'm gone, I'm gone.
Follow us on Twitter at RNRAutopsy, or you can send an email to rockandrollautopsy@gmail.com, and if we run across anything good, we'll mention it in a future episode. Thanks for listening. Later.
Well, you know, that's just like your opinion, man.